Well, boy, howdy, do we have ourselves a good conversation coming. And I say that in all seriousness, but you're going to hear that phrase a little bit because we're going to Oklahoma. Michael Kelsey is the executive vice president of the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association. In case you've been living under a dry rock, there's two big things happening to the cattle industry right now. It is very dry and big key cattle producing areas, Oklahoma, hello, and Texas and Kansas and other places. We're going to talk about the struggles that the producers in that state are facing. We're going to learn more about Michael. We're also going to have a little bit of discussion of some of the politics involved in the industry. We've discussed that before about action that's heading on in Congress, how some parties within the party, senators, are struggling to find common ground. So what does that mean for the producer? But let's go a little bit, find out what's going on with the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association. Our guest today, Michael Kelsey. I'm Paul Yeager, by the way. This is the MTOM Show podcast. You're in the MTOM podcast studio here at Iowa PBS. If you have feedback for me, hit me up at paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. New episodes each and every Tuesday. If you like us, rate us. If you have comments, leave them. I'd like to hear from you, either where you listen or watch, or you can email. But now, let's have that conversation with Michael.
When you Google Michael Kelsey, I see rock star. Do you get that often? Do people stop and ask you, are you that rock star guy?
I really don't. Although, you know, I've Googled myself. Everybody does that.
Everybody does it. It's okay.
I think he's from Indiana, and yeah. I've never met him, and I'd love to meet him sometime. I have no idea. Yeah, but no, I'm not the rock star. Not okay. Even close. So,
well, yeah. I think when we get done with this, people might say, well, he's a cow rock star.
I don't know about that. We'll see. I don't know. There you go.
So we're sitting what, in Oklahoma City?
I'm in our office in Oklahoma City. We're down in the stockyards is where our office is. We've been here since probably the early 60s, which is great because there'll be a cattle truck parked in front of our office almost weekly, certainly on Mondays and Tuesdays. And we don't mind one bit because, you know, hey, that's our customers. That's our livelihood. That's our members. And so, yeah, we're right down here in Oklahoma City. It is dry, dry, dry right now. And I know that's what we're going to talk about.
We are. First, I want to talk about you a little bit. From the farm. Did you grow up on a ranch?
I did. I grew up in southwest, kind of south central Oklahoma. We had a primarily registered operation, but we had some commercial cattle as well. Probably the most, honestly, the most money we ever made as a kid was when we stockered some cows. Dad took advantage of a market that just let him go buy some, just kind of some old cows. We dewormed them. The first thing we did when we got home, turned them out with a bull. We had some forage. Made more money on those cattle than about anything else. But that's how I grew up. Grew up feeding cattle, you know, doing chores in the morning, doing chores in the evening, et cetera. Just loved it. Loved the beef industry. Loved the people in the beef industry. And I'm blessed to be able to call OCA my home.
Were you in one of those positions where, yeah, I'd like to go back, but it's hard to do?
Yeah, it is. I was. And the operation where mom and dad were wasn't big enough to keep several people. And the 80s were tough on us, as they were with a lot of people. No hard feelings, no resentments or you know, nothing of that nature in terms of our family, because mom and dad were able to raise my sister and I in a rural environment and instill a lot of those good qualities there. And we weren't able to hold on to the operation after the mid-90s, but that's okay. I mean, those types of things happen. Unfortunately, you try to move through them, but just very grateful for the upbringing that I had.
Well, and that allows you in your job to be able to relate to people when you say, I know what you're going through, and it's not a hollow thing that you're saying.
I hope so. I genuinely try to remember. Obviously, a lot of things change. Agriculture updates with innovations and technology like every other industry does. But you still have to go feed those cattle when it's cold outside, and you still have to haul water to them. Oh, there's no water. So
stop with this cold business of Oklahoma. It what gets below 40 or something?
I tell you what, the past two Februaries here in the state of Oklahoma, we've had a couple of stretches that were gruesome for us. Yeah. And actually talking to some folks, they've changed their operation because of it. I, in fact, one of our past presidents used to calve quite a few heifers in early February. He's not doing that anymore. And he said, you know, I just can't do that. I probably won't ever have another February like that in his lifetime, but it changes you. And so you're right. It's all contextual. It's all context. boy, howdy, it can get cold.
Well, I will say that our friends from North Dakota and northern Minnesota that watch and listen to us, they do give me grief about, Paul, look at the temperature today. you're complaining about single digits. We haven't seen that in a month. So, yes, there I get go. It is all relative. It is all relative. Okie State, Oklahoma State, is that where you went?
Oklahoma State. You bet. Yeah. You bet.
You can't shake that. I get it. I know.
There you go. That's right. Even got my orange on.
I see that. Why there?
I actually started at NEO on a livestock judging scholarship, junior college, and then went to OSU. But I had planned to go to OSU my entire life because I wanted to be a veterinarian. And my granddad was a veterinarian in Southwest Oklahoma in Elgin, and that's what I wanted to do. So Oklahoma State Animal Science was that was kind of bred into me. Dr. Todashek, who was the department chair for years, if anybody's acquainted with OSU, you know Dr. Todd. And so he recruited and recruited and recruited, and so I was just going to OSU, and that's where I went and loved it. Had a great tenure there, learned a lot of things, met a tremendous amount of people. And that's really probably, honestly, the people is what valued me more, or was more valuable to me than anything in that sense. But yeah, go Pokes. Absolutely.
Did you, when you say livestock judging, was that something you thought maybe you would do more of?
No, well, you mean after college?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes.
You know, I did a little bit there for a while and then got busy with other things. And my wife and I, we obviously started having kids. And so we started showing a little bit and so forth. I still love to go to a livestock show and armchair quarterback, the judges that are out there, you know, how everybody does, but, you know, it's one of those things. It's a lot of fun when you do it. It's a lot of work and it takes a lot of talent. And I really admire those folks who do that. And do that well, because there's some good ones. You bet.
When did the logo behind you become a part of your life?
I started in 2013. Is when I started here at OCA, and I'm actually in our boardroom is where I'm at. And I have to say, I was in this boardroom when I was in my teenage years, when I served on the junior cattlemen's board, as well as the Oklahoma Junior Herford Association. We would have our meetings here at the OCA office in this boardroom. And as a junior cattleman. And so, and I remember even younger than that, when I was growing up, we would often sell cattle over here at the stockyards. A lot of times we sold at Apache, that was a little closer for us, but a lot of times we sold here. And so when Dad and I would bring cattle up here, we'd always stop at Cattleman Steakhouse on the way back. You just had to do that. But as we drove by, you know, Dad would say, hey, look, there's the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association. We were members of OCA as I was growing up, and you know, little snot-nosed kid push his nose up against the window and go, wow, look at that. And now it's my office. I mean, it's really honestly a bit of a dream come true. And I view it more of as an honor and a privilege to work for our members and the beef cattle producers here in Oklahoma. But I do feel a sense of heritage at this association because it's been a part of my family's life for many, many years.
Did you come in at the position you are, or did you work your way?
No, I came in as exec. I was actually I'd kind of been a nomad since I left OSU, moving around, but spent some time most recently before here. I was at Nebraska with a Nebraska cattleman. And again, that's a who you know, not what you know. I bought a Hereford heifer from Homer Buell. Shovel Dot Ranch, which is square in the middle of Nebraska, when I was a sophomore in high school. And we stayed connected, and he knew my family and I knew his family, and we stayed connected. And years later, he called and said, hey, we've got an open position. Would you be interested? And I did, and went to Nebraska, moved the family up there for about 8.5 years and loved it. And Nebraska cattlemen were so good to us. I mean, they were so kind and generous to an Okie who I didn't drink coffee till I moved up there. And I did that just to survive the winters, you know, it's so cold. But
yes, as now we're back to the relativeness. Right. Yes. Nebraska.
But yeah, but anyway, so it you know, it and then when I had an opportunity, when the previous exec, Scott DeWall, who's a good friend, when he left to go to REI, the position came open. I thought, you know, it's home. I've got to try and see what happens. And we've been here since 2013.
You are sitting in the boardroom And when those members, board members come in, what are they telling you right now about the state of the cattle industry and the state of Oklahoma?
Yeah, we're in really troubling times. It's weather related and economy related is two things I would say is what I'm hearing more than anything. And then as you look at the average age of the beef producer, not only in Oklahoma, but even across the country, but I mean, Oklahoma is not unique in that sense. The average age of the producer, whether you're in the cattle business or farming corn or whatever, we all know that age is creeping up. And so we're going to see a lot of generational transfer. And so sometimes the drought and the economy actually excels that in not a good way. Sometimes it can be good, but not necessarily. So water right now, drought, whether we're hauling water to cattle or trying to figure out how in the world to water the cattle, that's really tough. Plus then the forage basis, or I should say the lack of forages, because of the drought and even the outlook. We're a strong wheat pasture country, as you well know. We import a lot of cattle into Oklahoma, mainly from the southeast is where they primarily come from, Kentucky and south and so forth. It's going to be tough to do that this year because we're just not going to have the wheat pasture unless conditions improve. And so that the outlook doesn't look very promising right now from a drought. And then you tack on the economy. And the economy, what I mean by that is cattle prices, you're talking to a cattleman, so cattle prices can always be better, right? I mean, they can always be better. But cattle prices really are pretty strong right now. Beef demand's really strong considering. But boy, howdy, when you factor in $4.50 diesel and the supply chain challenges of where do I even get hay? What is corn going to cost? What are feedstuffs going to cost? How am I going to ship it in? All of those input costs are just really challenging, folks. And so we're hearing a lot of concern. We're also hearing a lot of selling. I would say right now, talking to Dr. Darrell Peel last week about this very question, you know, how many cows have we sold in the state of Oklahoma? What's our cow herd, in other words? And we're probably he said, you know, I'm going to kind of guess this, but it's 8 to 12%. I wouldn't disagree with him at all. And I think we're going to see another sale of cows because a lot of our members are telling us they don't have enough hay to get the cows that they still have through the winter. And so we may have to sell some more cows. So is it theoretically possible that we'll sell 20% of our cows in the state of Oklahoma? And I think the answer is yes. I hope not.
Well, what time frame are you talking here when you say 8 to 12?
8 to 12 would be, oh, that's a good question. So it would be relative to this time last year.
Okay, so we're talking annual.
So year over year, annual. Yeah, yeah. So this time last year, we could sure. And, you know, we weren't bumper crop of cows, but we were a healthy cow. We were a very healthy cow herd this time last year.
Now, I know you said things are connected and we know that they are. But if you had to say one is leading the other in why someone's making a sale, is there a leader? Drought.
Drought. Definitely drought right now. It's just we just don't have the forages. Either on the ground or stored hay, et cetera, or the prospect of forages. We actually have a lot, and you would know this, but we have a lot of folks who graze cows on wheat pasture. Mm-hmm. So in addition to stockers. And so without that prospect of that green feedstuff in December, January, February, March, and then those guys who decide to graze it on out, it's just going to get really tough. So drought by far and away is the main concern.
As we record this right now, Michael, the state of Oklahoma, 99.97% of the state is in some form of drought. 3 months ago, that was 41%. But we know if we go back to a year, we were back up to about 70%.
Right.
Has it been a long pattern of drought that's led up to some issues? I mean, because you look at winter wheat a year ago at this time, there's always optimism in agriculture. If you know, it'll rain if we plant it, it'll work itself out. But right now, it's not working itself out.
No, it's not. And, you know, that's an interesting question. And I would say that's probably more of an individual type of an answer. In other words, there are some folks who compounding droughts has just really hit them pretty hard. There are others that maybe it hasn't as much as. And then there are other, for instance, like this time, this drought, especially on the eastern side of the state, has struck people so hard that they weren't necessarily in some of those deep shade colors that we see on the drought monitor as last year. that, boy, howdy, they're having to make some decisions now. So that's why I say I think it's really more individual as to what an individual's having to do on their operation. But holistically, we're seeing some drastic actions, some drastic changes that would, as a pattern-wise, would indicate we're selling cows. The number of calves we're going to have is not going to be as high. The available forage we're going to have is not going to be there. So just some really difficult decisions right now.
Who are the buyers, in-state or out-of-state?
Most of them are out-of-state. A lot of these cows are, from what we understand, are going to slaughter. A lot of them are going there. You said a minute ago, optimism. I tell you what, you're absolutely right. And so we're working with members on the IRS. Obviously, there's some rules in place that if you have to sell cattle beyond what you would normally sell, then you can offset some of those capital gains if you reinvest within 3 years and so forth. And so we're working with members to make sure they know the information they need for their tax accountant. That's just the optimism of who we are to remain in business. And to keep looking ahead at that next year, hey, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. We're going to get through this. But boy, howdy, it's just really tough right now. But we're thinking most of those cows are going to slaughter. So that tells me that a good replacement heifer this time next year is going to be worth her weight in gold, maybe. And so if we do have some members who've had some timely rains and they've been able to hold on to some of those heifers, they may be doing very, very well this time next year.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask then when you say where they were going. Who in your state can survive this? A larger producer or a smaller producer?
That is a really good question. And if the larger producer has done some things to insulate themselves, and those would be more production in orientation, then they will be able to survive. Now, again, they're going to downsize if they have some access to some pasture somewhere else that they can get some cattle to and so forth. The smaller producer, what we're finding interesting about them is some of them, in fact, most of them, have off-farm incomes. And so they're a little bit insulated from some of the drastic changes that we see, whether it be market oriented or input costs and so forth. Still hits them. I'm not trying to trivialize that by any stretch of the means. But with that off-farm income, they are able to maneuver a little bit that maybe a larger producer who's solely based on their income on those cows may not have that functionality to do. So again, I guess it drives home, it's still somewhat of an individual response. And I know that sounds kind of, weird, but it is. It is what it is. Yeah.
Well, let's get you in political water here. Those small producers hurt or help the industry?
I think they're very much helpful to the industry. We've got to have producers of all shapes, sizes, and kinds in our industry. If you consider the availability of the resources, there are some resources that a smaller operator can take advantage of that a larger operator cannot. Remember, we're dealing with an animal that the good Lord created to take something we can't use and turn it into something we can. We can't use grass as humans, but boy, howdy, we can use beef. And that cow can do that better than anything else. And so there are some available resources that a smaller producer may have some access to that a larger producer, it would just be too cost prohibitive for them to try to get to. At the same time, larger producers provide that bulk and that volume, that consistency in product. I mean, you can breed, 200 cows to the same genetics. And so there's a place for everybody. The other thing I would emphasize, too, is even in Oklahoma, which is we're a flyover state, we know that.
So are we.
Yes, you are too. Not a high population state, but we're seeing more and more consumers who want to reach out to a local producer and purchase their product locally. So a small producer can do that much more efficiently than a large producer can. And so I think there's room at the table for everybody. And we need to emphasize that. And we need to help producers, whatever their model is, let's help them build it up.
Well, it's like you were looking at my questions, or at least the ones I had in my mind. I want to go back to March, April, May of 2020. We're seeing the stories. We did the stories here on Market to Market about locally sourced food. People are like, okay, the big packer can't push the animal through, but this small 2 to 4 person can do it. Did that happen in Oklahoma like it did in these states that I'm in? that maybe don't have quite the large footprint of the animal like you do?
Yes, we did. We spent, I so appreciate your question, because in March of 2020, actually probably a month or two before that, we reached out to Secretary Arthur, Blaine Arthur at our Department of Agriculture, who is fantastic as far as agriculture is concerned. She's a cattleman. She was raised in agriculture. She knows what's going on. She has a great connection to agriculture. And we asked her, hey, can we work together, public, private, if you will, and figure out this packer issue, this ability to pack animals? And she said, let's do it. And so we started working on that at that point in time. Actually, I really dug into it from a task force presentation type process and looked at what are our challenges of building smaller and medium-sized packing operations. The ability to build a large one, we'd love to do that. I think everybody would. But the realities of building a 5,000 head a day packing plant are just tough. I mean, they are. That's what they are. But boy, if we can build a lot of these smaller ones that then can service those folks who want to sell directly, as well as maybe able to sell into their local restaurant. We have a producer out west in western Oklahoma. She sells a lot of her beef to a local Mexican restaurant. They advertise that as local beef. And so it's a great partnership. Small, it's not industry changing, but boy, it's sure changing for her. It's critical for her. And so that has come along very well in Oklahoma. I tell you, that's the challenge we're running up against too right now, though, is rendering. The ability for rendering product, whether it be hides or the offal, O-F-F-A-L product, the offal product, the tongues and the livers and, you know, all those types of things. Even if you're in a 50 head a week plant, you've got to do something with that product, and it has value. So we're trying to figure out, we're working with our legislature now, Representative John Pfeiffer, who's doing a great job asking some good questions about rendering. I just bring that up to say, hey, we've got opportunities, but we've also got challenges, but let's look at them as opportunities and build our industry.
Do they say in the cow industry, like they do in the hog industry, they process everything but the squeal or everything but the moo?
We use everything, and we can even have moos on our phone now. So we use it all, don't we? We use it all.
Well, let's go back to the Pokes. Let's go back to Oklahoma State. What's that relationship like of telling the university what the need is and put some brains in those think tanks and those towers of, you know, here, how can you help us out?
We've got a great relationship with Oklahoma State. We just hired, I'm not employed by OSU, but I am OSU. We just hired a new department chair of animal science, Dr. Richard Coffey. He's going to do a great job. We're excited about the enthusiasm that he's bringing in. Dr. Casey Shrum, who is our university president, she's a medical doctor, but she's very in tune with rural Oklahoma. And so she has translated her thoughts and processes on healthcare to rural Oklahoma into the health of rural Oklahoma more than just health. And so Oklahoma State is really positioning itself very well to do a lot of good things for rural Oklahoma. And we're really excited about that.
Let's close. Let's do the last part about politics for a bit. I know I kind of teased you earlier.
You bet.
There's national bills being discussed that could help or hurt the cattle producer. Are there state bills? First lay the groundwork about what's important in Oklahoma. I mean, does your state legislature really help you, or do you get better assistance on the federal level when it comes to some of your national part of your livestock industry?
You bet. We have a great relationship here on the state level. Both our House and Senate do a great job, but both of our chairmen of our ag committees, as well as some of our leadership within the House and Senate, whether it be a floor leader or something along those lines, are rural, and they're in tune with rural Oklahoma. So excellent there. Oklahoma, our federal delegation is fantastic. Now, we're gonna change a few of those. We're going to elect a new senator, James Mountain Inhofe. Senator Inhofe's retiring, and so we're going to elect a new senator. It looks like Representative Mullins is probably going to be that person, if you know, depending on who you look at the polls and so forth. We'll elect a new congressman on the east side of the state. All that seems to be shaping up. We have a great relationship with our federal delegation here in Oklahoma. We're very red. very, very red. So very Republican, very conservative, fiscally conservative, as well as how do we make this work out in the real world is what I call conservative versus a one size fits all. And that's important when you think about environmental issues, climate change, some of those types of buzzwords that come up, especially in Washington, way more than they come up in Oklahoma City, but are very important for us to be at the table to engage in.
All right. You didn't mention, though, anything about that Packer margin or the Independent Producer Act, or I mean, where does that relate?
The Cattle Transparency Act by your good senator, Mr. Grassley, and Senator Fisher, just to the west of
yes.
him. Yeah, we struggle with that one specifically because of that mandated selling piece, that cash market or negotiate. I shouldn't say cash. That's not fair. Negotiated trade, that mandated negotiated trade. Our folks have just traditionally been, hey, we need to not let the government tell us how to sell and buy our cattle. That being said, we love some of the ideas of the act about transparency. We need more transparency in our market, no questions asked. And we want to do to help whatever we can do to help make that happen. We want to do that. But boy, howdy, just to be honest, that mandated piece just gives us a lot of heartburn.
Well, I think, and when you talk about the red, I mean, you're talking about other Republicans that can't agree on this topic, let alone trying to get the, as of now, as we record this, still the majority in the Senate. They're trying to find something. So do you think that's maybe been a little bit of the hurdle in trying to get something done?
You bring up a great point. It's hard to talk agriculture in Washington because the air in the room gets sucked out by the Supreme Court or Ukraine, or which are all very, very important issues. And agriculture only affects, what, less than 1.5% of the people or something like that. We all know those figures, but it actually affects us all because we're raising the food. And so it's really hard to have those conversations sometimes, which means then we have to have them really fast, which sometimes means we don't have time to really figure out what we can work together on. It makes it just tougher to have those decisions.
I believe a conversation we've had previously on this podcast gets into go back to your independent nature of the Transparency Act of that. If you don't have that part that mandates what a packer has to buy, that's their big problem. Because they think sometimes a packer will buy more, but if the packer's not mandated to buy more, they won't. Do you agree with that?
I don't necessarily agree with that. I see their point. And it's one of those conversations we've had a lot of discussion about this outside of Washington. We need to be able to have it more inside of Washington without the politics, which is, I know, is a crazy thing to even ask and say, but it's just a perspective issue. Again, I think eventually beef demand is fantastic right now. And boy, if we could finalize it and really hone in on that, let's build demand for our product. Packers going to pay more, especially if we're building more packing facilities that will compete with those folks. And if we're more transparent in our market prices and some of those bigger contracts and so forth, that would be helpful as well. So it's not can it be a war on the range? Yeah, we could do that if we want, but that wouldn't be productive. Let's not do that. Let's figure this out together and move forward in a positive fashion.
What do you think about packer margins? I mean, we were at really high levels. We're starting to let off those a little bit. Is that just America at work?
It sure can be, can it? I mean, sometimes when you have a corporate model system that answers to a shareholder versus answering to a family, it makes it a really tough dynamic that can cause some challenges, if you will. Maybe some of the us versus them type models. The us versus them don't work. We've got to all win at this business, and we can all win at this business if we meet, in our opinion, meet the consumer's demands. Let's fill that consumer demand. There's a place for us, just like we talked earlier. There's a place for the small guy. There's a place for the big guy. There's a place for the medium guy. Just thankful that we raised the best tasting animal protein product in the world. Thank you for letting me put that in there.
Michael, let's do this. You're 10 years in on the job.
Yep.
10 years down the road. Who's the biggest, what's the face of the cattleman look like in the state of Oklahoma?
You know, I think 10 years down the road, we're going to see a lot of generational transfer of assets, land primarily. Again, going back to that age issue, I think you're going to see a cattle producer that's very diversified, that's very risk-oriented. So they're managing their risk as much of anything. I'll give you an example. Back in about 3 weeks after the August fire up in Kansas, the Tyson fire in Holcomb, Kansas, I called a producer and I said, hey, how you doing? Because I knew he had about 300 calves ready to go to the market. He said, you know, I sold my calves before they were born. So I'm really not worried about this market. I'm like, wow, tell me more about that. I think we're going to see, I'm not suggesting we'll have more people sell calves, but I think they're just going to diversify their risk. They're going to figure out how do we manage that more appropriately. I don't necessarily think it's more integrated type marketing systems. We'll see more of those. That's natural, but it's not necessarily that. I think we're just going to get creative. We're going to be, we're going to figure out how to diversify our income, use our land to do that, whether it's wildlife or whatever the case may be, and do a lot of those types of things. We're already starting to see a lot of that. I think we'll see more of it.
It's dry. And we're selling off. I've got my two points right. Do I have it right?
You've got them right. We need a reversal on that trend.
I'm going to go back to weather for a minute. Driest since 2010, 11, and 12. You hadn't started on the job yet, and it was that dry. I remember that drought. I think we had video out of Oklahoma, and we saw the sale barns were full. Are you seeing a repeat of what it was 10 years ago?
We've slowed down a little bit because we sold them earlier.
Right.
So we're seeing less now because we sold them earlier.
Okay.
I'm afraid we're going to see another resurgence here in the next month or two.
Well, and so I guess the reason I bring it up is it's a little misleading when you see, oh, sales aren't so bad. That's because everything's been sold already.
That's
and
correct.
If it's not going to another feedlot or another pasture, and it's going to slaughter, of course, that animal's not going to resurface.
That's right. Yeah, and she's our factory. Yeah, she's our fact. She's what makes the calves. You know, calf prices next year, year after, is going to be great, right? Because we're selling all these cows, we'll have fewer calves. But if you don't have any cows to make calves, then you don't really care what calf price is.
Right.
So, yeah.
Heck of a cycle. All right, get back to practicing that rock music so we can add rock musician to it.
I love it.
Michael Kelsey, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
My thanks for the insight there on what's going on with the Oklahoma cattlemen. We'll keep watching each and every week on the Market to Market TV show. And every Tuesday, new podcast comes out called the MTOM. That's what this is. Thanks for watching, listening, or reading. See you next time.